Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. Selma Weiss and Howard Braun are interviewing Dr. Leib Kessler. The date is January 18, 1995. Okay, I think we could start with your immediate family. Maybe you could tell us something about your mother, your father, your siblings, what year you were born.
Well, I was born in 1923 in McKeesport, Pennsylvania. The only interesting thing about my birth is that they didn't know what to name me. And so it became the fact of life that I was left to choose my own name. They, however, gave me my Jewish or Hebrew name, and that was Leib, with the idea that I would someday decide whether it should be Lewis or Larry or Leonard. But I just accepted the name of Leib and never thought of changing it, and so it has remained all these years. It's interesting in the fact that it immediately signifies to all Jews that I'm Jewish, and it immediately arouses in others some interest in what kind of name is that. And it's been of particular interest to me that people either know my name and never forget it, or they can't say it and can't remember it. So it's a sort of double-edged sword. My grandfather's name was actually Leib, and when he came to this country, they called him Lewis. And I have two other cousins who went by the name of Leib. They called him Larry, and the other they called him Lawrence. And so it was in the family that there was Leib 1, Leib 2, and Leib 3, only they diminutized it by saying Leiby. So everybody from my place of birth refers to me as Leiby, and of course in my professional career as it should be Leib. My father came to this country in 1908 from a small town called Proskoro in the Ukraine. He was a member of a rather large family, as was the custom in those days, and his father's name was, as I said, Leib. His father and oldest brother, Philip, came to this country in 1907, and in that year they traveled out of Czechoslovakia, rather out of Ukraine into Czechoslovakia via a horse and wagon. They paid a farmer to take them across the border, hid in a haystack, because my uncle, whose name was Philip, was getting to the age of being taken into the military. And in order to avoid that, as it was the custom in those days of being in service in Russia, meant, of course, a lifetime of servitude and second-class citizenry. Jews could not become officers or could not advance, could not even get leave, and had many restrictions placed on them, so that Jewish families did everything they could to save their children from that fate. And so it was that my uncle and his father came to this country in that fashion. They actually, how they got from Czechoslovakia to the ship of embarkation, I'm not sure.
Where did they leave from?
They left from Hamburg, Germany. And they arrived in the port of New York in October. I forget the date. I think it was October the 7th. I did know that. And they landed at Ellis Island. And they had relatives who were in McKeesport, Pennsylvania. McKeesport, Pennsylvania had a large Hungarian population, but surprisingly, a small fraction of that population was not Hungarian. some of those were my relatives, and they were attracted to that area. So they left directly from New York and came to Matisseport, and there remained. They worked for a year, saving their money, I think when they came, they had jobs, laboring jobs. As a matter of fact, it's interesting to me, and you think about the history of our people as immigrants. I have the manifest of the ship on which my grandfather sailed, and they list the profession of each immigrant, and he has listed laborer. Apparently at that time, there was a great demand for labor, and that's how people got into this country, by admitting they were labor. Actually, he was a baker, and they owned a bakery shop in Proskurov. By the way, Proskurov probably doesn't exist as that kind of community, but at one time, and I looked this up in the archives, at the, what is the name, Howard, you may know, in Jerusalem, in Tel Aviv, the history of the Jewish people. I always forget the name of that. Well, at any rate.
The Diaspora Museum.
Yeah, the Diaspora Museum. Mm-hmm. And they had Proskurov, and apparently at one time it had 50,000 Jews. Mm-hmm. There were those, like my family, that left, and there were those that were decimated by the war, and particularly the history in the Ukraine, which decimated whatever Jewish population was there. So that I don't think there are any Jews left in that area. But my father, therefore, came to this country a year after his father. And it's interesting to me how much sacrifice was required. We can't really think in those terms, how it's possible that a father can leave his entire family, and I think roughly, without recounting the names, I think there were six children, so came with one to avoid the military service, and then managed to save enough money for a passage for the rest to come the following year.
Your father did?
My grandfather and his oldest son. My father was the second child. The of interest about that, my oldest uncle, his name, as I said, was Philip, had told me from time to time about the fact that they owned a baker shop, and they were assailed from both sides, both from the communists as well as the capitalists. They were assailed by the capitalists because they were Jews, and as Jews believed in fair employment practices and all those things that most Jews believe in. And on the other hand, they were capitalists because they owned property or business, and they were assailed by the communists, by the then evolving communist movement. It's interesting that this was so well indoctrinated that when they came to Matisseport, my uncle, Phil the oldest, actually ran for the Matisseport school board on the socialist ticket. His youngest brother, who became a lawyer in Matisseport, and I'm jumping ahead of the story, but just as a matter of interest to this subject, was a brilliant man, was with the bar in Pennsylvania and in Pittsburgh for 50 years, actually, even as a very young man, served as the secretary of the Socialist Party in Matisseport. And he knew Eugene Debs and told me many stories, and people of that category who would come through Matisseport and make speeches, and there were great rallies. And in our day and age, at least the day and age in which I grew up, this was something of the dim history of the early part of this century, of which we know very little. Nonetheless, getting back to the migration aspect, they all came, the entire family, consisting of my grandmother, whose name was Fanny, all of their children. I've mentioned one, the oldest brother, Philip. The second brother was my father, Abe, actually listed in the records as Abraham. Next was the brother of the brothers was Joseph. Last of the brothers was Morris, who, as I said, became a lawyer. And then there were sisters, Sarah, who was actually the youngest child, and an oldest sister, whose name was Sadie. Now, it was interesting about talking about sacrifices. Sadie, being the first child, was not married. She had a fiancé, however, in Russia. And when they sent the tickets for them to come to this country, they also sent a ticket for the fiancé. That's how important these relationships were. It turned out that the fiancé demurred and chose not to come, so they had an extra ticket. And that ticket, and this is another sample of the sacrifice of those days, it turned out that there was a cousin, a first cousin of my father's and his family, whose mother had died years before, and he was an only child, and he was the same age as my Uncle Phil, ready for the military. And his father was alone in the world, except for this child. And when there was an extra ticket, they offered it to him. His name was Jake Pildish. That turned out to be a rather humorous name in the key sport. We always kidded about that name. P-I-L-D-I-S-H. It turned out that they offered the ticket to Jake Pildish, and he said no, he wouldn't take it because he didn't want to leave his father. His father insisted that he come to this country with the Kessler family. And by the way, the name was not Kessler, it was Tesler, spelled with a T. He did come. And his only family here, of course, was therefore the Kessler family. He left his father, who he never saw again. These are the kinds of sacrifices that people made for each other in those days when people had little and only hope for the future. Jake Pildish turned out to be a wonderful man. I remember him as a child. Wonderful. They were all wonderful people. Now, they started in business in McKeesport. They had a grocery store. First, it was all Jews who came to this country. Most started out peddling of some sort. They peddled groceries or produce. And finally, they had a store where they sold produce. And I think they had a couple of different types of stores. Finally, after many years, went into the real estate and insurance business. And that's the business that I knew them in. They built a building in McKeesport during the 20s, which was called the Kessler Building. And it was one of the nicer buildings in McKeesport. My father and my uncle built it. They had a real estate and insurance business, as I said, and then the Depression came, the Great Depression, and unfortunately they lost everything, including the building. And it was simultaneous with the death of my father. He died in 1930. He was then 32 years old. He had been born in 1898. He apparently was quite a nice man. I remember growing up and hearing many wonderful stories about how wonderful a man he was. It was always a great source of strength for me that he was so well thought of. And as a matter of fact, I remember as a child reading the funeral clippings that my mother had preserved. And imagine in those days, in a little town like Metisport, the newspaper front page, it was called the Daily News, said 200 automobiles came to his funeral procession. apparently, in those days, there were so many different philosophies of Judaism that each group formed their own synagogue, and they formed a group, his father's group, that was called the Coxey's Army, and I don't know where that came from in Metisport, and that was a group of what we would term Ukrainian or Russian Jews, and they...
It's a Civil War term.
that's right. And they, and my grandfather was the president of that synagogue, and when he died, during the flu epidemic in 1918, my father became the president of that synagogue. He was practically out of his teens at that time. And he and his brother Philip, and then after he died, my uncle Phil became the president of that. Gradually, they merged with another synagogue, which still exists to this day in Metisport. And as a matter of fact, about 15 years ago, this merged congregation then merged with another congregation, and I remember that we made some donation, and there was a booklet which had their names and their pictures involved. So there was some continuity as far as the synagogues were concerned. I remember as a child being brought up in a fairly orthodox environment going with my father to these services, and of course he died when I was 7 years old, so this had to be memories from much younger years. That took us to the point at which I then became a student of Judaism and went to the...
What year are you talking about?
Talking about the late 1920s, 28, something of that sort. In 1930, my father died. I was then 7 years old. And I think because of the death of my father, and because my mother was a Sunday school teacher, I then became very active in the local modern synagogue, which was then conservative. We considered it very modern at that time. And it has existed to this day, called the Temple B'nai Israel. There was a man, and I'll talk about him later, Egon Pessin, who became a surrogate father figure. And I had many experiences that were wonderful, and exposures which were unusual.
Was it B'nai Israel?
Temple B'nai Israel, yes. But let's go back to my mother's experience. I've talked only about my father. My mother came from a family called Levine, or Levine, I'm not sure the correct pronunciation. My mother's mother came to this country in... Her name was Rachel Leah, Rochaleah in Hebrew, Rochaleah Levine. Now, the interesting aspect of there, I don't know as much about that immigration because my mother was actually born in Halifax, Nova Scotia. I'm told that what happened was that my grandmother, Levine, was on the ship, the steerage class, of course, coming to this country and was pregnant and went into labor off the coast of Halifax. So they didn't have a doctor aboard. They put her in a boat and sent her to Halifax, Nova Scotia, and she remained there and had the baby there, and later, and I don't know the details of this, came to the port of New York and then eventually to Now, why they came to McKeesport was because there was a substantial Levine family already in McKeesport. How they originally came, I don't know. I have an idea that they came to McKeesport because there might have been a pulpit, because the Levines came, as I heard quoted many times during my youth, came from 17 generations of rabbis. So that the head of the Levine family was a man by the name of Wolf Levine, and he apparently was a rabbi, and I imagine that maybe because there was a pulpit available, I'm not sure of those details, he came to McKeesport. And then, of course, his sister, who was my grandmother, came with her husband and with their first child, my mother. She later had two other children, less than a year apart. Both girls. And then her husband, I'm told, didn't like it in America because he had to work. Apparently came from a fairly well-to-do landed family in a place called Kozna Kaverna in Lithuania. And don't ask me to spell that out, please. But you know what Kozna is. Everybody knows that's new village or what else. But
Kaverna means district.
Yeah, district. It was in, they were Litvaks, so I know they came from Lithuania. And they came to McKeesport. Apparently, his father owned property, and he found when he came to America, he had to work. Everybody thought they came here, the streets were paved with gold, and he found that was not so, that there was opportunity, but it meant hard work. He went back to Russia or to Lithuania. He was never heard of again. Never knew a grandfather on that side, nor did my mother ever know a father on that side. And she had two sisters. My grandmother on her side made a living by scrubbing floors, taking care of three children and three daughters. It was interesting, just passing on to more contemporary experiences, that she actually became a comfortably fixed, not well-to-do, but she owned two houses and collected rents, and was reasonably comfortable in her old age. Her family, that Levine family, became very prominent in McKeesport, and not my grandmother, but her brother, Wolf Levine, had, I believe, 11 children, and they all became very successful. They owned a clothing store in McKeesport. I think it was called Union Clothing, and they were very successful at merchandising, and apparently were one of the early stores to give $1 down and 52 weeks to pay. So that became very famous, and they became very rich and very successful. My mother, of course, happened to be a very beautiful young woman and married at age 17. My father was 18. He worked with his brother at everything. They had the grocery store, then they eventually went into the insurance and real estate business. My mother was a homemaker, and as a matter of fact, I think did not graduate high school until some years later, or graduated after going to night classes. My grandparents on my father's side died as a result of the flu epidemic, which was a very famous epidemic of the late part of the
1918,
something like that. And my grandmother died a year later, and I'm not sure why, or she had a broken heart or whatever. Those are the kind of definitions we get, but I don't know how accurate they are. It's interesting that not only did my grandmother and great-grandmother on my father's, and my grandmother on my father's side live and die in America, but their father on the Tesla side, also came over, but he didn't come till much later. They sent for him. He was living in the Ukraine, came here, and my uncle tells me the story. My uncle, now deceased, the lawyer, told me the story of how he used to take care of him. It was his duty every morning to see to every Shabbat, to take him to synagogue to pray. And his name, I can't at this moment think of his name, but apparently when he came, he was considered to be very old. He actually died in 1926, after his son died, my grandfather. So I have now, in a cemetery in McKeesport, Pennsylvania, I have a great-grandfather, a grandfather, and a father, and a mother, and a grandmother, all laid to rest within 25 square feet. So I've had a rather substantial family background in the sense of continuity. My grandfather's sister who married, her name was Bella Sheen, and she's buried in the same place. Her husband left her, I think, and I don't know anything about that. We had another relative in McKeesport that actually brought my family to McKeesport, and that was the sister, a sister of my grandfather, and she married a man by the name of Rosenblatt. I always remember he was Charlie was his name, and his name was C.J. Rosenblatt. It's interesting to me that it's only recently in life that I realized the relationship. Somehow that didn't click in, and I laughed to myself because I remember my youngest son, Philip, who's named after my uncle. When he was little, we used to say, Aunt B is coming, and he would say, my wife's sister, and he would say, who's Aunt B? And it's interesting that kids don't get relationships, and somehow I never got that relationship, but I realized in late life that they were really close relatives. But the Rosenblatts also lived in McKeesport. They had a grocery store, and I remember that grocery store. I always remember one comment about we called her Aunt Tilly. She was my grandfather's sister, and so that would have made her my great aunt, I guess. And I remember that she would say to my mother after we would leave there, and I was a little tight, 3 or 4 years old, she used to say, Elizabeth, are you living from him? And that was always quoted to me as I grew up. I must have been a holy terror. The family always assumed that I was a difficult child, and apparently overactive child.
Move a couple, about another minute, if you want to finish your thought.
There were relatives on that side with whom I was very close, and I remember, as a matter of fact, one relative on the Rosenblatt side who actually took a very great interest in me. It was very meaningful. There was both a cousin, I guess the relationship would be really second cousin to me. She married a doctor in McKeesport, Dr. Itzkowitz. Her name is Pearl Itzkowitz now. She's living in Washington, D.C., and I talk to her every once in a while on the telephone. She pretends to remember, and I've asked her many times to tell me the stories of their youth, and I find that she fakes a good deal of it from what I know to be fact. what she creates is mostly fiction. But she's probably in her mid-80s or so. Her husband was a very active physician in the Matisse Board. He did mostly ear, nose, and throat work. And his great love was the piano, I remember as a child. Whenever he came into a house with a piano, he immediately sat down to play and did that for many years after he left. There were other members of that family that remained as a close-knit extended family, which is always very important to realize how the contrast of the day with then, how we don't have those kind of close relationships. For example, when I was little, I had no father. My mother had to work for a living, and I would come home from school, and I remember the brother of this woman that I'm talking about, Pearl Rosenblatt Itzkowitz, his name was Sidney Rosenblatt. He would take me out swimming in the summertime.